Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Tom Pickup, and welcome to the Really 007 podcast for this very special interview with Robert Darby. We absolutely love you, Robert, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, gentlemen.
Oh, pleasure's all ours. Thank you so much.
Christopher, Rob, yeah. Harry, License to Kill.
Yeah.
Math and Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah.
Math is like the subject math.
Well, yeah. It's short for Matthew. It's just
Matthew.
One of my older brothers used to call me, and it kind of stuck.
Hey, Math, how's it going? All right, mate. Obviously, you're fun. Where are you guys now in England right now?
Near Manchester, most of us.
Manchester. I was at Manchester.
Oh. Really?
I was there for a signing several years ago.
Right.
Oh. They had about a half a million people at the signing. They had the thing. I think it was, they had a whole, you know, it was nice. Lines for hours and days. Great city.
Oh yeah, it's lovely.
We're
at 8 o'clock in the evening here.
It's early.
Yeah.
Hitting the pints yet or not?
Always.
Are you guys not drinking yet? Are you not?
Well,
what are you sipping? What is Harry drinking?
It's an ale, a pale ale.
See that? I mentioned that, and his lips got wet.
It's quite simple. Yeah. Quite simple.
Very good, though. Feels good, doesn't it? Going down.
Rob, have you not got a Guinness, Rob Parker?
No, I must admit, I'm at the end of quite a heavy week, so I'm on the peppermint.
That's a heavy week for you, Christopher.
Oof.
I mean, Rob. Rob had a heavy. What was your heavy week?
I'm a novelist, Robert, so I finished a book on Monday, so I've used it as an excuse to enjoy a drink every day so far.
What is your book? What's it called?
It's Blackstroke? Yeah, Blackstroke's one of them, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's been a good week. This is the perfect cherry on the cake, though, man.
All right. Now, are your novels successful?
Yeah, I'm full-time, so yeah.
Very good.
Thanks,
congratulations,
man.
That's
Thank
great.
Thank you very much.
Writing is a fun aspect of
our existence. Blessed to do it.
Yes. So you were ready for everything. Look at that. He's got his little speaker thing there.
Yeah.
The mic is hanging up there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No bullshitting with Rob, let me tell you. He's not a wanker, that one, I tell you.
An English swear word. Yeah. And Robert, of course, played Sanchez, our favourite villain in License.
Franz Sanchez.
Franz Sanchez. Franz,
yeah. If they say Bond, James Bond, they must say Sanchez, Franz Sanchez.
So, License to Kill, you might have seen us on Twitter. It's our favourite, and we absolutely
thank you for that. Yeah,
we love it. and we're trying to make everybody appreciate it more. And I think it seems to be working. I think the love for it has increased in the last year or so.
Yeah, it has. You guys have been affecting it. People are looking at it differently. I think there was a guy named John Muir, M-U-I-R. Do you know who he is?
Is he on Twitter?
He's not. He's a. If you can Google him, John Muir, License to Kill review, Bond. I believe he's English, but he gave several years ago, probably the best overall review of the Bond and relooking at License to Kill. And of course, you know, I was one of his top Bond villains. And then you could read what he has to say, but he was a guy that caught my attention a while ago.
Yeah, 2012, I found the article, 2012.
Yeah,
yes, great.
Yeah, you found it, right?
I did, yeah, I found it, yeah.
Yeah, read that article, guys. It's really, he does what you guys did on it, you know, which was great.
Robert, I've just done what every annoying person does and just look at the pictures in the article, and it just has a thing on it that says, this is how Sanchez rewards loyalty, and then it's got a picture of Heller impaled and then a picture of the Truman Lodge shot a few times and Milton Crest head exploding. So loyalty is more important to you than money, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but health, wait a minute, both those people were kind of like, you know, all right, Truman Lodge was just irritating.
We've had him on the podcast.
Yeah, we've had
on the podcast. Yeah.
Did he ever tell you the story when I put charcoal on his nose?
He didn't know. Please tell us this. This is
right now.
He's a good kid, Anthony Stark, a good actor, and he did a great job as that. But it was irritating, you know, that accountant thing. So I just, as an actor, you go on what you're feeling, you know, for the actor and the character, you know. He was like a necessary evil to Sanchez as his accountant, you know. But a bit irritating to Sanchez, you know, just to, and he was very, you know, young actor, and it's a good break for him. And he was, I guess, you know, when you break into the business doing your first film with Frank Sinatra, you know, there's nothing else really to make you fearful about the business, you know, for me. So that was 1977. So now it's 1990, 1989. And so I've you know, worked with Schwarzenegger. We went through so many different, it was par for the course during filming to have practical jokes, to do practical jokes. You know, I mean, Arnold and I did, you know, fantastic practical jokes all the time. Yeah, it's great. Yeah, we're doing a movie called Raw Deal. And Arnold was throwing these little things that, you know, they like sound like firecrackers that explode against the right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like early in the morning, and he's doing that at my hotel. We were on the beach in Wrightsville Beach, Carolina, and he's throwing these, and he's talking to Maria, his wife at the time, and Jake Blum, his lawyer, or Lou Pitt, one of the lawyer or the agent. And you know, anyway, if he's Maria, we have to do this here, Lou, and we're doing here. And he throw a thing, you know, to tease me, because we would, you know, we became very close friends. So I looked out the curtain. Ah, it's Arnold. And he has a big cigar and he's pontificating right on the beach there, right? You know, because we were. And I went to the bathroom. I got the pail, the bucket. I filled it with lukewarm water and tons of soap suds, you know, shampoo soap suds. I waited. I opened the door. And as he comes right by the door, yeah, fantastic. Yeah, we're doing this, Maria. He takes a nice puff of his brand new Churchill cigar and I dump it right on him. Oh, so it's hanging from his cigar. Now, Maria's cracking up. Lou Pitt's cracked, doesn't know what to do because, you know, but Maria's laughing. And Arnold, most human beings, if you got water dumped from a height, would go like this, you would flinch. He didn't flinch. He just stayed like a statue with the thing. And he goes, this means war. And I won't tell you the great time we had doing practical jokes against each other all the time. So I come from that era.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're doing this and we're doing Bond. And I think we're in Mexicali. And, you know, sometimes if they didn't have equipment, the old makeup artists would take a cork from a wine bottle and they would burn it and it would create shading. You could create shade, you know, put on lightly, or if you needed to do shading. So the makeup artist had done that and put that on the counter. And me and Benicio were talking and having, you know, laughs in the in the hotel, in the trailer, the makeup trailer, and Anthony Starr comes in, you know, from outside, and he goes, oh, hey, how's it going, man? How you doing? He goes, oh, what's this? I go, shh, put that down. He goes, what? I look at Benicio. Shh. I go, that's hash. Hash. He goes, hash. I go, yeah, smell it. So he goes to smell it, and I just threw this on his nose with it. So now he's got the ash mark on his nose. Anthony, a young actor, and I hope he forgives me for telling this story. He kind of like it was a big thing for him. It was traumatizing. And of course, Barbara Broccoli being the mother hen, you know, and I was like, you know, I was already in Sanchez mode. So, you know what I mean? I was playing Sanchez. And so my behavior was not totally like Sanchez, but, you know, you keep it on a slow burn when you're filming for 5 months. So at dinner that night, John Glenn comes down. He goes, Robert, what did you do to poor Anthony Stark? What do you mean? He has half a smile on his face. Apparently, he's upstairs crying to Barbara, and Barbara's quite upset. He says, now, I don't know if they were teasing or not, but Anthony, and then Barbara comes down and says, Davi, what did you do to Anthony? Okay? I says, Barbara, what? I did this. It was a thing. It was a joke. Anyway, so that's what it was. So that's my Anthony story. He's a terrific actor. But I did wind him up a little bit, as everybody did, you know.
Yeah.
So loyalty is more important to me than money. Yeah. So, you know, knowing all that, he had to have a demise. He ratted me out.
Yeah. Spray
to Barbara, you know, and John Glenn.
Brilliant! Well done, Franz. Another $80 million write-off.
I guess it's time to start turning overhead.
So, you know, I'm sorry. Time to start cutting overhead. That's for Hella. Wasn't Hella betraying a little bit? He was ready to take off.
Yeah.
He was betrayal.
He was disloyal, yeah.
Disloyal. Yeah. So any act of violence that Sanchez committed was done to him.
Strictly business. Yeah.
From the beginning. And I justify that. Even Lupe.
Yeah.
The opening when you want him, what did he promise you? His heart? Give him his heart. So even that. But that to me should have been autoerotic, because Ian Fleming always liked the autoeroticism, but you couldn't do it at that time in film. So in other words, I felt that I wanted to play it titillating, that Lupi and I have this little game because it's good for our sexuality. And she likes to be, you know, because Ian Fleming was, you know, Bond was a little bit sadistic. That was a little bit of what it was in the books. Anyway, but that was not, that wouldn't have gotten us an X rating. So she had to die when I whipped her.
What did he promise you? His heart? Give her his heart.
No. No, Franz. I didn't mean any harm.
It's all right, baby. No te preocupes. We all make mistakes. Your escapades are getting more creative.
Por favor, Franz.
Not a word.
But every act of violence that Sanchez commits in the film actually is in response to what was done to him.
Yeah.
I mean, just moving on that, Robert, would you say, my personal opinion is that I'd say Sanchez is the most human of the Bond villains in terms of he's the most charming, but he's obviously the most realistic as well. And there's this phenomenal bromance that goes on between Sanchez and Bond throughout this film. And I suppose in this alternative world, I'd have just loved Bond to have joined the organization and you'd taken over the world. It would have just been sensational. We could have had License to Kill 2, 3, and 4, like Lethal Weapon.
Well, we would have had to go to another business besides drugs, which is a terrible scourge on our societies. But I think that, yes, there was... Well, Timothy and I, from the beginning, when we met at MGM and had lunch for the first time, There was a, we talked about Casino Royale and how Bond and the villain, how Ian Fleming talks about Bond and the villain being mirror images of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is probably the film that really was clearly had a bit of that going on, because Sanchez had the charm, he had the danger and the whatnot of it all, you know? So there was this, Sanchez had an appreciation for Bond, of course.
Yeah.
So yeah, it all starts with Ian Fleming and Casino Royale in terms of the mirror imaging of the two characters. And he is the most, I mean, I think I was one of the youngest Bond villains at the time. And also someone who was formidable in terms of his physicality, along with Bond, because a lot of them hadn't. And also the, I don't know who, I know some others had animals in their films, right? Cats and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They had, if that was it, but no one talked to the animal, I don't believe. But I actually related to my animal. And I related to the iguana even more so in License to Kill. I wish we would have the outtakes of some of those conversations I had with her. I did have conversations with, and it would whisper in my ear. I go, really? So we had a very good relationship. It did not like Talisa Soto. The iguana did not take to Talisa Soto. It was very interesting. She knew. She betrayed me. She knew. The iguana was very smart. And John Glenn, you know the story about the iguana, right?
Well, please tell it. Please tell it, Robert.
Do you not know the story?
No.
You know the story. You just want to hear it.
I don't know it, no.
No, the iguana just didn't like Talisa Soto. They had to put it in a cooler because they had to, if it got hot, it got aggressive. So they would put it in a cooler and then it would take it out for a shot and stuff like that. But the iguana was quite lovely. I got very close and friendly to him. I got an iguana. My kids got one after that. Actually got an iguana. Yeah, I ran out of the cage and my son grabbed its tail and it actually sheds its tail. It feels like it's in danger. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It grows another one. Yeah, interesting enough, you know. But so we're filming the shot and I hear whispering behind the camera. It is not closer on that, Alex. Look at that. Look at that one. Look at Alex's eyes sparkle. It's fantastic. Look at this. Great. So real. So engaging. Going tighter. I think it's fantastic. So I'm hearing this shit on the camera. And of course, my ego is going, see that, John Glenn knows. Because I knew I was doing some good work. But I'm thinking, oh, wow, look at that. Right? To myself. And after the cut, all right. And John walks over looking at me, right? Like he's going to say something and I'm like all puffed up. And he then bends over, you're such a marvelous actor. Talking to the iguana. So natural, so fantastic. Make sure we have more close-ups on this iguana. Really good. And then John cracks up. You know what I mean? He couldn't hold it any longer. Because he was winding me up, of course, the whole time. But that's how much fun we had on that shoot. All the time. It was just great. And the last one that Cubby did, who was wonderful, and Dana.
Yeah.
Anthony Stark said it was quite a party atmosphere at times.
Well, I was Sanchez. So I would have Benicio and I and Talisa. You know, we were doing Muppets and Tequila. We were in Polanco and Caballo Bayo. So we were doing slammers. I mean, it was, you know, on weekends. So we had a lot of fun. And I wanted to have that exuberance of Sanchez that, you know, that's why even in Benicio, there's almost like a homoerotic moment when I grab him by the face. You don't know what is it. You know what I mean? I didn't want to. And that's pretty early on to do that in the Bond film.
Yeah.
To show, to not be afraid of. Yeah, because that's in those cultures, there is that. Affection, and who knows where it ends or not. And even when the moment when Benicio was getting eaten up by the thing, it was a little thing. I says, who would you? Because he called me his mentor for many years, Benicio, after that, because we were 5 months together there. And then we did Columbus together. And I had studied with Stella Adler as he had. And I said, well, who do you think you'd be calling as you're being eaten up? Sanchez. And then he yells at Sanchez as he's going for it, because that's where, you know, it's like a surrogate parent to him.
You're dead.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
He remained loyal, unlike...
Oh, yeah, he was loyal. But no, Benicio, Dario was loyal to me. Of course he was, because he's family. He has to be loyal to me.
I always read that perhaps as that there was a family relationship there, possibly.
Between us, yes.
Yeah. That maybe like an uncle, or you'd taken over almost as like a surrogate sort of father figure.
Yeah, it was ambiguous. I wanted it ambiguous. I didn't want to define it. I didn't want to be his father. I didn't want to be his uncle. And I wanted people to buy into, could they have been lovers? Who knows? Could there have been something there? I wanted to leave it open because I thought it was interesting to have people say and watch and say, oh, wow, interesting. Mm-hmm. So however it was interpreted, you know what I mean? It's what it was.
We've done an episode where we've gone through all the henchmen from the series, and obviously Benicio ranks, you know, very highly up there, and we talked about him a lot. But it's partly because of his relationship with you. All the other sort of henchmen going through the series, they're just a hired hand kind of. There's no relationship between the villain and the henchman. But with you two, yeah, there's that, yeah, a very familiar relationship, which is like that his death is impactful enough, you know, how gratuitous it is, but for him to add that extra level of shouting for your name, I don't think any other Bond film would have gone there or done that. There's no other relationship that would have produced a death like that, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that was, again, the relationship that I had right from the beginning when he comes in and you see our first thing and I embrace his cheek, you know what I mean? Right there, it's not the typical, it's creating a symbiotic, bringing him into my world as a trusted person, as a relation, as somebody close to me. And that's why at the denouement, I said, you have to yell Sanchez as you're getting eaten up by that thing. That was a suggestion I had made to
him. Great call.
And how much sort of preparation did you do for the role? Given that obviously he's a very grounded character, isn't he? He's a very believable character. Did you sort of look at real life figures for inspiration?
Yes. Right from the beginning, Michael Wilson recommended me reading a book called The Underground Empire. And then also when I did, and I knew it was a mixture of Pablo Escobar, Ochoa,
Noriega.
No, not just Noriega. There was another guy, a German guy. There was a German drug lord who had a German name, Colombian. Mm-hmm. But I knew that he was from Medellin. So I actually met with Escobar's architect in Beverly Hills. I then put the word out. I then read copiously. I learned about the cumbia music, la musica cumbia, and the paisa dialect, Eva Maria Pues Hombre, which I could have done much more difficult accent, but we didn't want to do that. They wanted something, you know, just a flavor of that whole thing. I even had sent them, when we were doing it, Gypsy Kings were very famous at the time. I says, hey, they would be great for a soundtrack. the Gypsy Kings could be an interesting kind of vibe to it. But I, and then, putting the language into Spanish and, like I said, the music and the subtle transformation that the music and the language and the culture and the food and reading about that world. That to them, it's business. And I don't remember if loyalty is more important to me than money was in the initial script. I'm not sure. Or I had suggested it because Michael Wilson was very, and Richard Maybaum, Michael was very available. And, he did a terrific job on that script because it was during a writer's strike.
Hey, ready to go? We got the batteries recharged on the sub. It'll take you the 12-mile limit, fast boat to Cuba. You'll be there for breakfast.
Relax, we wait for Dario.
Look, are you crazy? You got everybody looking for you. What about Killifer? Having a cop here is nuts.
I want to deep six him.
I made a deal with this guy, and I'm going to keep my word.
I don't like it. He can finger me. I spent a fortune on this cover.
Something you better understand, amigo.
Loyalty is more important to me than money.
Yeah, and John Glenn has quite an easy style of directing. Was that the whole vibe of the production? Where there was that ability?
John Glenn is so efficient, knows what he wants, no big, it was just, come on, you think 5 months and So it creates, he creates a creative atmosphere. You know what I mean? The relaxed creative atmosphere where you feel nothing is going to be, and he knows what he needs and what he wants. It's not like, you know, it's so such a well-oiled machine that was, and I'm sure all of them. So it was like taking a warm bath every day. You know, you weren't put into the, even though we had sharks and stuff like that, it was just really just the circumstance that was created. You know, it's a believable story. It got, it was unfortunate that it didn't make the money it should have made. It made a lot of money foreign, more foreign than it did domestic. But for whatever reason, and people want to talk about, you know, an episode of Miami Vice and all that other stark criticism they make of it without it being really looking at the layers of what it is and what it, and look, today, it's as current today as what's happening in those drug world as it is anything else. It hasn't aged. It hasn't like been, oh, that's from back then, you know, much like, you know, some of the films. And Cubby always talked about having a film they learned from other films in the 70s where they were of a time period, but they wanted these to kind of continue on. Like, wait a minute, we're just watching it now. It's that current. Before they got into all the, which is fun, all the aerial effects, you know, this is, you know, the Julian brothers, this is like, you know, when you watch this on the film, people are happy to see not the digital effect world that we have today.
Definitely.
Absolutely. I mean, just going on that, I mean, the stunts, obviously the Kenworth tanker chase, as we see there.
Yes.
You know, that must have been pretty grueling to film. Obviously, you know, the stunt work and all the rest of it going on, but just love you to tell us about that as an experience, because it is one absolutely sensational scene.
Well, they were shooting that for weeks in Mexicali, and then they knew exactly where to put Timothy and I in to the moment, so it wasn't too grueling. You had the great stunt guys doing their stuff, and then we would come in and, you know, do what we had to do for those moments. So it wasn't that in terms of, you know, the scuba diving aspect, I think, was, you know, when I get the opening, which is a great opening when you go into the off of that Key West, you know, the
bridge,
the bridge off the bridge. Yeah. That to me, you know, was a fun stunt. You know, that was interesting. And the other stuff, like, again, it was those tanker trucks are doing and those drivers are doing all the work. Timothy and I are put into that. And now we're reacting as if we're in, you know, how they do that stuff. So it wasn't that it was grueling for them, you know, and there was also a cloud of you know, I remember, I think the Inquirer or someone, when they had the explosion, supposedly the devil came into the you know, there was some freaky stuff that happened around it.
Yeah. Did you experience anything?
I hadn't, luckily, because I'm so Catholic. I had a million different rosary beads and holy water and iconic things keeping it all away. You know, because Sanchez was very religious.
While we're just at that point in the film, that I think this is one of the most iconic villain deaths as well. I'm sorry for this sensitive subject, Robert, but the death of Sanchez is just one of the most iconic. And I what was it like to see that? Did you see them film that, or did you?
Oh, I was there. I did. They did light me on fire a little part. They had a stunt guy that's very well protected, but part of me was lit on fire. And then, of course, it's, you know, so we can have that close up of when he has the lighter.
Yeah.
Don't you want to know why?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which was...
Could have had everything.
Yeah.
You know?
The screams, is that all you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is agony.
Yeah. You know, but so that's, you know, you've got to imagine what it's like to be, you know, to be burned on fire.
You could have had everything.
Don't you want to know why?
I would say, like, right now, I would like Sanchez back to be a villain now, you know, but I'm like, there's no coming back from that, I don't think.
That was quite a final... I fell Sanchez. That idea that, you know, he was helicoptered into a Swiss hospital where they rebuilt him, and he's now in a chair with a breathing machine.
And he becomes kind of villain to come after Bond.
No, unfortunately, I couldn't come back. No, I don't think Barbara would want me back.
Well, with the greatest respect to Barbara, that would be the greatest result for Bond 26 we could ever imagine.
Yeah.
Well, you tell them. You say they could always put me in as another character too.
Yeah, they used to do that.
They used to. You know, if Cubby was alive, it would have happened.
Yeah.
I know that for sure. Pretty sure. You know. You guys should get a hold of the, you know, I'm sure you've heard the interview with when I did test for Bond.
Yeah, John Glenn says you were brilliant.
Yeah, he's the wonderful. And they asked me to pick the girl, my girlfriend, Sanchez's girlfriend. But they didn't want me to feel, you know, I was going to do Sanchez. So I did Bond.
Yeah.
And I did 17 actresses and models from around the world. And I played Bond in all of them.
Oh.
James Bond. And I had that quite good thing going. I think I was more like a young Sean Connery kind of vibe at that time. 32-inch arms. I mean, 22-inch arms, 32-inch waist. I was slender. And it was fun. It was fun. I got to play James Bond.
Robert came in and dressed up as James Bond and played Bond for me to test her. And I tell you, he wasn't bad. Robert was quite good as James Bond. He really was.
All jokes aside, though, there's something in that, Robert. Like we've talked about before, the similarities with you and James Bond. You are a version of James Bond, which is why it's so effective.
Yes, yeah, there is that. So there was also, you know, being able to... And it was a great, you know, because that's how I saw it. I saw Sanchez as this mirror of Bond. Mm. And, you know, with his, you know, Medellin background.
Yeah.
Remember... You're only president for life. I mean,
you get all the best lines.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure deliberate, wasn't it? Because Timothy presumably wasn't as comfortable with the sort of Roger Moore one-liners. And
That was. And then what happened was they were seeing it on screen. And then, you know, bon appetit. Timothy then, you know what I mean, realized, wait a minute, there's a way of saying these lines. And it also, being, you know, from what I understood. And then of course it was, there was a, you know, a little bit of a, because he had his approach, you know, he wanted to erase, of course, what was done before or had, what had been done up to that. But for me, he did a marvelous job. And he's great. He's a great actor and a great person. We had wonderful time together. And when I talk to him, it's wonderful. Every decade or so we make a space.
What memories do you have of working with Tim? What was he like as a guy? Because
most generous actor. He's just a wonderful person to work with. Yes, he's no competition. There's competition about making the scene and making each actor feel comfortable. It was just, you know, it was just it was just spot on. Good. You know, we like two great jazz musicians playing together, you know. Oh. You know, that's why that whole thing. That laugh that we have when we first meet happened when we first met.
Yeah, more of a problem eliminator.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And we had that moment when we first met.
Oh.
We had that moment when we first met. So I felt, and he felt, I'm sure, that let's bring it on here. You know what I mean? Let's bring that to reality.
Well, travel man. You did all right at the tables tonight.
I had the feeling my luck was about to change.
Well, it's a wise gambler who knows when his luck is run out. Why this?
In my business, you prepare for the unexpected.
And what business is that?
I help people with problems.
Problem solver.
I'm more of a problem eliminator.
And now you're here on business?
No, temporarily unemployed. I thought I might find work here.
Well, it's very difficult to obtain a work permit in Isthmus. It's, one has to show a special talent. that people here don't have.
Well, that shouldn't be too difficult.
It's in your bond, you got big cojones. You come here to my place without references, carrying a piece, throwing around a lot of money. But you should know something. Nobody saw you come in, so nobody has to see you go out.
Señor Sanchez, I could be very useful to a man in your position. And I understand you have a reputation for rewarding loyalty very well.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'll keep this for a few days. We'll talk again. And you won't need a gun in Ismis. It's a very safe city.
In the meantime, I welcome you to the casino at all times.
It was quite a, you know, great, great experience and a lot of fun. And, you know, the history of cinema, there's nothing like Bond.
No.
I hope they don't ruin it. I hope political correctness doesn't ruin the fun of Bond.
What do you think about the recent films, Robert?
I enjoy them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy them. I think Daniel Craig is doing a great job, and I think they're exciting. You know what I mean? So it's hard to compete sometimes against the backdrop of those. And, you know, of course, I'd lie if I didn't say I was competitive in terms of keeping Sanchez, in a top contention, you know.
Top
5 or 10 of Bond villains. So there's all of that, you know, you have to say, okay, what is that? But it just is, so I enjoy that. I enjoy the Bond films.
Do you not feel that there's in some way the Daniel Craig films owe quite a lot to...
Oh, absolutely. I call Timothy, License to Kill is the father of Daniel Craig.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think that those Bond films were ahead of its time by decades.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's the father that spawned them. And now they have more special effects and everything else. So you can kind of, and different filming techniques, of course, that can make it a little more. Because don't forget, when we came out, we had Batman and we had Lethal Weapon. Yeah. So there were a bunch of films that were now being made differently or starting to be made differently. And we had a, you know, classic style that we had with License to Kill.
Yeah.
And so you have, but it still is... exciting to see the evolution of Bond. And again, I say it, that Timothy is the father of Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
Were you aware of how much of a leap forward it was in terms of the tone of the Bond films when you were making it? You know, it's such a harder prospect, License to Kill, than anything that had gone before. The theme's so much deeper. Were you aware at the time that this was a jump forward for the franchise?
Yeah, I think it was done on purpose. And also, I didn't focus on that except, you know, the character, you know what I mean? The story, but I found the Bonds, don't forget the early ones with Sean Connery, you know, you had so many glimpses of where they were. You had a certain kind of, there was a theatricality, but there was still a very believable. And then it was only later on with Roger Moore that some of the other aspect of Bond became larger than life. And, you know, you had, as a departure from what had been, but not had what had been prior. I think it was more an evolution of the Connery lineage. Mm-hmm. And then now taken up by Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
And of course, Pierce Brosnan did a terrific job.
Oh, yeah. He certainly did.
Yeah. Are you glad you got Timothy, though? I think it's the best Bond for you, I think, for Sanchez to be pitted against.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, Timothy had that edge and he had the intensity and he had the, you know, and the humanity of it. You know, Tim, you know, you think about, and I remember this, I remember the scene when he meets Sharky and he's walking in the, in a blue shirt, just a very relaxed blue shirt. And you think to yourself, well, that's not Bond. He's not in a Savoy Row suit right now. He's in this. But then you think to yourself, wait a minute, but he is a secret agent.
Yeah.
He's a guy that I would believe now going into this atmosphere of infiltrating and being low key and not drawing attention to himself. So that's the reality that Timothy was coming from with it. And that he was trying to go, you know what I mean, into that. And I think absolutely that was right. And it was great.
What was he like to have a beer with?
We had Muppets. Wonderful. Yeah. We had a blast. We had a lot of fun. We had a lot of laughter, and you know, it was hard work and it was enjoyable. It was really quite an it was wild. It was fun. It was fun.
I love the fondness with which you talk about this, though.
Yeah. I know.
This is such a. I mean, I this is by my desk, Robert. That's from the wave crest.
Yes.
That much this film is
it's meant a great to be. Shot, then. Yeah. You should have a shot of me in my pink shirt, by the way.
Yeah. Just
right there.
That scene between the two of us.
You're right there.
I know, but I have a shot with him and I when we were at Arabesque, and I've got that pink shirt on.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is a great shot of us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Without running the risk of sounding a bit weird, Robert, I actually have that pink shirt and the blue cardigan. And when we get out of this COVID period and we can have fancy dress parties, I will be going as Sanchez.
You mean you have the actual one?
No. I have one from Debenhams.
Give it back. Okay.
You need a machete as well.
I need a machete and I need some wicker shoes. I need some.
Yeah, the wicker shoes.
Yeah.
Do you still have any of the props or costumes or any keepsakes, Robert?
Yes, I have the original script and then I have some of the wardrobe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Then your price. Yeah.
Oh, that's staying in archives.
it just seemed like the perfect storm, License to Kill. You've got, in my opinion, the greatest Bond portrayal in Timothy. In my opinion, and I'm not just saying this, the greatest Bond villain in yourself, and also the greatest Bond director in John Glenn. And you've obviously worked with some incredible directors, you know, people like John McTiernan and Paul Verhoeven and stuff. But I'd just love you if you could just share. We think that John Glenn is very underrated, not just in Bond, but in cinema in general. And I know that you've already said about how calm he is and stuff. How diverse he is across these five Bond films is absolutely sensational.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love you to just wax lyrical about him because it's phenomenal, really.
Well, all I can say is that I know that producers, Hollywood producers, probably a lot of them, watch the Bond films to get ideas from. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those ideas are things that John Glenn invented during the course of his reign as a director. He invented a lot of things. He loved animals. That whole thing with the stingray and him hiding with the stingray. I mean, you don't realize the stuff that he invented. I mean, he was an editor on Wild Geese, that movie with Richard Burton. And so John, as an editor, and the pacing of the film, keeping you going. And, you know, he's so adept at, Talisa was a terrific actress, but she was new. So he knew that he needed to keep her in movement. And this is John, you know what I mean? And would help her with her interpretation. And John's a very quiet observer. He's a very quiet observer. And then he'll strike like a python in terms of, you know, the creative act. He'll take it in, and then I don't mean strike negatively, but I'm saying, you know, his wheels are turning. And then And that's why his performances in the Bond films have a sense of reality. Mm. Because John is not a performer as a human being. You could see him very internal with a very keen sense of humor. And he just is, I'll give you a for instance. A lot of directors, when Benicio did that nice honeymoon. Okay, so that's a very quirky line reading. Yeah. That could be, you know, no, it's honeymoon. Nice, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But John likes the quirk. He understood the quirk, you know what I mean? And when we did, I worked with him again in Christopher Columbus, The Discovery. So John has this, again, being able to interpret the script, to give the actor the freedom and also the confidence and being able to come in with what he has to come in with. He's just, you know, a very wonderful person overall. He really is. You get very fond of him. Great sense of humor. And the crew that he worked with, all the English crew that he had, they were all supportive and they were all family, you know, and, you know, it was like being at a resort for 5 months.
When we spoke to him, he said very similar stuff. And he talked about how because he's so humble, isn't he? He was saying, well, you know,
very humble.
He was almost saying, you know, directing's easy because you just hand over to the actors and they're amazing at what they do. And he was saying, talking about giving that creativity. But then on the same note, he was praising you, Robert, just saying how good you were to work with.
Robert Darvey was a bit of a character we gather as well on License to Kill.
Yeah, he became a very good friend of mine, Robert.
Oh, great.
I mean, Christopher Columbus.
Yeah.
And The Discovery. And he was a great guy, a terrific guy.
And then Chris Columbus as well. And, you know, obviously having that kind of relationship with your director must be crucial. I don't know if you can talk, you know, with the other films that you've been in, the relationship with the director must be pretty crucial.
You have to have that. They have to love, look at the director. You know, have John done more films, perhaps, maybe when we met each other younger, you know what I mean? Mm. You always look for a director that, you know, John Huston found Humphrey Bogart. And they had that symbiotic relationship and did a bunch of films together. You know what I mean? You have De Niro with Scorsese. You have people that find, you know, and you can just feel comfortable with each other and continue film after film. Had we had the old studio system, I think John and I would have wound up doing a bunch of films together. And because of the mutual respect and the ease of which we can, you know, of the communication. Again, even on Columbus.
He's trying to make fools of us.
It is ignorance and lack of courage which makes fools of men. Listen to me. I tell you that a well-disciplined ship can make this voyage.
Cheap little trick.
Huh? It proves nothing about the Sea of Darkness.
A sea so broad, even if Cathay were on the other side, no man would live to see it.
He knows what he's saying, Cologne.
The world is round, correct? Where I stand, it will be the beginning and the end. 0 degrees and 360 degrees. Where Martin stands, 90 degrees. De La Cosa, half the globe, 180 degrees. Vicente, three quarters of the globe, 270 degrees. Can you follow that?
Don't insult me, Cristobal.
The length of Europe and Asia to the tip of Cathay is roughly 260 degrees. Beyond Cathay is Cipango. Let's say 28 to 30 degrees.
Paulo never saw Cipango.
No, but he had the word of Chinese sea captains.
So we can't be sure.
The Ocean Sea is 70 degrees of the world. There are 45 miles to a degree, so it is 3,000 miles from Palos to Cipango. And 2,400 miles from the Canaries. A well-provided, a well-disciplined ship can make that.
What if your figures are wrong?
They are not wrong.
Would you sail with him, Fra Juan?
Alas,
that is not possible. But if it were,
there is no power on this earth, saving the Holy Father, would keep me from making this voyage of discovery.
a funny story of Columbus. When I got the part for Pinzón, Martin Pinzón, and I had done research, and we didn't have cell phone or texting. We could only, you know, not even email, fax. So I was faxing him and Ilya Salkin, you know, notes on the character. And John said, when we get to Malta, we'll sort it out. So I figured, oh, no, I hope so. Anyway, so now we get to Malta, and John greets me at the hotel in the lobby. He goes, Robert, did you speak to the Spanish experts? I go, why? He goes, because every note you've given us, they brought up, and we won't be able to get the seal of the crown of Spain or the ships. And they want, because Pinzón was a character that in Spain, there are statues. He's as important as Columbus. There's Pinzón Day. Mm-hmm. I says, no, I didn't. I didn't even know there were Spanish experts. And he giggled. He says, also, it appears that there were Davies on the ships on the voyages.
Wow.
So I didn't know this. And then, so anyway, so even in the filming of that from the beginning, and then we, you know, he's so open to that, the researching of it all. And he was, let me put it this way. Marlon Brando is a very difficult person. Could be. Brando was in this movie.
Yeah.
Now, Brando, we're up in the hotel room, and I knew Brando because of Stella Adler and also George Englund, who produced and directed the film that actually got me the Bond film, because Cubby Broccoli and Richard Maybaum had seen it. And then they offered me the Bond film. So I knew Brando. So Brando had come to play Torquemada, and he was in England at the time because his daughter was there. And he had come to this with, he goes, watch. And he puts in these teeth. And then he goes, and he had fingernails made. I see him like Nosferatu, the Torquemada. And unfortunately, this is not what we were doing. It would be a whole different lighting thing. So John has a conversation with Marlon. But Marlon, I said to Marlon, I says, he's a gentleman. I says, you know what I mean? I says, John Glenn is a great guy. I says, I don't think it's the style of what we're doing. I says, but he'd be open to what you have to say, of course. So I said it like that. And anyway, you know, John didn't bullshit him. A lot of times guys will bullshit with Brand, you know, bullshit. Oh, you want to do that? Absolutely. Go ahead. Blah, 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 blah. And John just said, you know, that's not, it's not quite what we're doing here. and Marlon liked, and then there was a whole big to-do. I don't know if you know the to-do behind the scenes.
No, please say more, Robert, please.
anyway, it's interesting. There were scenes where Brando, but this will show you how John Glenn is able to navigate difficulties with the least amount of headache. There were scenes that Brando had with Ferdinand and Isabella. Isabella was Rachel Ward, and Ferdinand was Tom Selleck. Okay, so Marlon already had an issue with a little bit of that. But the scenes he had there were, he says, I'm sitting around like an old grandmother for all these scenes, listening to them. He says, I want to send an emissary to the and he can report back to me, so I'm not there. And anyway, so they, and then Tom Selleck had gotten upset and put a note down and was going to leave the film because he did it because of Brando, you know, and whatnot, having scenes with Brando. And anyway, so they negotiated. So Brando was going to be in several scenes, and there'd be an emissary that would be in several other scenes. And that was worked out. So now on one of the scenes, and we're in Malta, I forget where we were, but John showed me the scene. This is how lovely John is. So now, here's Brando's close-up. Now, he also looked like Friar Tuck in that big outfit, right? And John shows me a three-minute scene of Brando with Torquemada and Isabella. And they're waxing elegant, and they're talking and talking and talking. And here's Brando's close-up. In 3 minutes, and John is howling. And John, you know, basically, who's to say he wasn't bored with them? He's Torquemada, the Grand Inquisitor. Who's to say? You know what I mean? He could not use it in the picture, of course. But the reality, John was laughing hysterically. How great is that?
That
shows you John Glenn. I mean, he understood and he had to navigate, you know, all of that. And of course, he's a guy that will, he's just an amazing person. And his wife, Janine, was wonderful. You know, they were just a great couple. I have very fond memories with him. And when I see him, it's always great. I've seen him a couple of times. I went to Sweden. They had a thing and John was there and he's, you know, how's his health and everything? Is he doing well?
Yeah, he seemed
great. Yeah.
Hey, John, I send you my love, John.
Thank you. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. You mentioned there, jog my memory when you mentioned about when you see him. What was it like when you all came together for the premiere?
Oh, that was exciting.
Yeah.
That was very exciting. I was having arguments with my girlfriend at the time who became my wife. I should have known. Anyway, four great kids and we had, anyway, but the premiere was exciting in London. Here I am, this kid that, you know, I mean, Princess Diana, you know, Prince Charles. Here we're going to do this for Princess Chus. And this is a funny bit, but so I know that it was a very exciting night. Okay, it's like an Academy Award night, you know. You're getting to meet royalty in England, you know. And I love Shakespeare. I did so much Shakespeare, and you know, and between Dylan Thomas and Shakespeare, and you know, Beckett, and you know, all the great. Anyway, Marlowe. So here I am. Very exciting night. We're on the receiving line, and they tell us how we have to receive the prince and princess. So I know that, you know, look at the Princess Diana, royalty. So I know that when she, I can't like stare at her to check her out. I'm a guy. I want to check out the princess. You know what I mean? So you can't do that. You can't check out the princess like that when she's right in front of you, you know. Hello, Your Highness. You know, wow. Whatever. So it's like, and this is broadcast live in the theater. So she's down there, right? Coming this way. And I'm like looking at it like this at the, I'm like trying to, as Prince Charles and her are approaching, I'm looking like this, you know, and it looks so shifty eyed, but all the English papers and on TV, what is Bond villain thinking? But it was, and then we sat by them and then we had the big event afterwards where Vanessa Redgrave was there and all the, you know, the Frank Bruno was, I mean, all the, you know, it was wonderful. It was quite an experience. Great.
You mentioned, obviously, this was, you know, a huge thing to be in a Bond film and it, you know, but you have an incredibly diverse kind of resume of, you know, like say action films and comedies and kids films and all sorts of stuff. So I was just wondering, is there anything in that resume that never kind of hit the mark, something that you feel that actually it might be worth people to revisit, you know, in a way to reevaluate? Because I feel that
It's interesting. A lot of people know the face, they may not know the name. And because I played characters and I haven't, you know, they'll remember me from Goonies, from Fratelli, you know, the opera singing, which I improvised that in Goonies, you know what I mean?
Stop! I'm just a kid!
What seems to be the problem?
Look, mister, I need a ride. My friends and I just had a run-in with these really disgusting people. You might have heard of them, the Fratellis. Well, we found their hideout. And could you please, please take me to the sheriff's station? I can describe all three of them.
Bimba dagli occhi vieni da Mario.
What the hell are you doing? He's only a kid. Can't you handle a kid even?
And Die Hard.
Oh. Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm Agent Johnson. This is Special Agent Johnson.
Oh, how you doing?
No relation.
I'm Dwayne Robinson, LAPD. I'm in charge here.
Not anymore.
And then, you know, there's so many different, I did a TV series Profiler where I was the head of the FBI for 4 years. That was a very successful show. And now every Dick Wolf show is about FBI. It's about what we did, you know, in Criminal Minds. It's what we did in, you know, 96 to 2000. We were, again, the first show. So you have, but a film that I'm, that I directed a film called The Dukes. And it's a small film, but it won 9 awards. And people should take a look at that. It's a very sweet film. And there's a lot of different, films, good, bad, and different. You know, you do them for whatever reason. But I've always, I even played Merlin in a film that we did in South Africa, Sice Brat. You know, I did a Welsh kind of my Welsh.
You betrayed me.
No, Ben.
Yes. I remember it all. I brought the staff to the cave, just like the wise one said. And you took my life.
Ben.
I'm not Ben.
You are Ben. Ben the Knight and all the other bearers of the staff down the ages.
Don't listen to him, Knight. You came to him for help because you promised the old one, and he stole your life.
No. I meant to save you.
Save him? You ripped him from time, fleeing the fates lifetime after lifetime.
Ben, you were never meant to be the staff bearer. You can feel its power. How was a man who was barely more than a boy able to choose between light and dark? Between power and humility?
He was the staff bearer, and he had the right to choose, and you took that from him.
Nothing would delight you more than to see him lose his soul. Would it, Morgana? I never meant to cause harm. If what I did was wrong, I am sorry.
Within the time strains and the constraints of what you did, I have a new TV series coming out called Paper Empire. I've got a film called Reagan where I played Brezhnev now that's coming out. And I just did a film with Kevin Spacey, Faye Dunaway, Stefania, I forget her last name, but big star in Italy, and Franco Nero directing it, and it's him. Vanessa Redgrave was supposed to be in it, but she wasn't able to do it. But it's called The Man Who Drew God that I think is going to be a very, you know, an Italian foreign film would be, you know, but there's so many different, and I'm supposed to direct a film that will be very controversial called My Son Hunter. I don't know if you've
heard of that. Story in newspapers over here.
It's in the British newspapers,
Was it? Oh, yeah, the Daily Mail, was it?
Yeah.
Daily Mail.
Yeah. It's been all over the place. But I'm very sensitive to drug addiction. I've had members of my family. There are people out there suffering from it. You know, I'm not going to do I want to do a film that tells the truth, like American Hustle. You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
I'm excited about doing that. And I have a new album coming out. Ronnie Scott's. I'm pissed at Ronnie Scott's.
Oh.
They've never invited me to sing there. Now, here I am, a Bond villain. I have, you know, I mean, England knows me to some extent, you know. I would think that would be a Bond villain sings. I think that would be a marquee thing. And my album went to number 6 on Billboard Jazz.
Yeah.
And I would love to do concerts in England or Ireland, or so you guys can hear, you know.
Oh, yeah. We'll be there.
Yeah. I don't know if you've heard some of my music.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I say that's life. That's life. As funny as it seems. You know, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it get me down. 'Cause this fine old world keeps spinning around.
It's been playing around the house these last few days, Robert.
Oh, that's good.
Genuinely. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a new album I'm working on that'll be out, hopefully, Valentine's Day.
Oh.
Fabulous.
Left your little Valentine.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
I'm just making the Fran Sanchez joke, you left my little Valentine.
Yes.
Yes. The moment when.
You like my little Valentine.
You like my little Valentine.
Yes, you like my little Valentine.
Robert, when you're out and about, do people quote lines from your films to you, and what ones are they? Are they mainly from License to Kill, or, you know, because you've got some
all different in other films? It's crazy. Wow. Depending on where I'm at and what they do, and who knows, it's all different ones. It could be from Die Hard.
Yeah.
It could be from License to Kill. It could be from Goonies. It could be from Profiler or Predator It could be from who knows where it's from, you know?
Yeah.
It surprises me sometimes, you know, that a lot of people in like the Bahamas and that part of the world, Bond films all the time. I mean, they're like, they go see me at the airport. It's like an amazing, they love the Bond films there.
I'm also quite amazed by how many of the lines you remember yourself. Like you seem to still have the License to Kill script fresh in you. Is that your experience with all films, or is License to Kill one that's particularly fun, close to your heart kind of, or are all stored up there?
There isn't an actor, producer, actress in Hollywood that doesn't want to play Bond, a Bond girl or a Bond villain. So there you go. So of course, I was a little kid in Astoria, Queens. Well, I was born in Astoria, Queens, where Cubby was born.
Yeah.
We moved to Long Island when I was 5, and my family was in Sag Harbor, where Cubby's family also had. And I grew up in Dix Hills. And I remember as a kid, you know, going to my coach, Ed Kirkman, who was a crime reporter for the Daily News, he says, you got to read His Majesty's Secret Service. He was raving about, because Kennedy had talked about the Ian Fleming books. Mm-hmm. And then seeing my first Bond and seeing Albert R. Broccoli and then subsequently year after year watching a Bond film and just saying, hey, and then here I am now, you know, in that Bond film, in that Bond world. Yeah. It was kind of interesting, you know, kind of, yeah. And then doing your first film with Sinatra as a kid, who was a huge figure. And Sinatra and Cubby were very close friends. And a guy named Sidney Korshak, who was considered one of the most powerful men of Hollywood. So I would go to Cubby's house sometimes and I'd have lunch with Sinatra, Cubby Broccoli, and Sidney Korshak. Wow. And if you research Sidney Korshak, you'll see how powerful he was. You know, but it was, you know, interesting.
How was it meeting Cubby? I mean, that must have been incredible.
It was great. His daughter, Tina, loved Goonies. And we'd go to a place called Cafe Roma, and Giuseppe Franco Hair Salon was there in Beverly Hills. And I met her there, and we hit it off and were close. And she said, you got to meet my dad. He was from Astoria. He's going to love you. So I have, at the bistro, I have dinner with her and her dad and Dana, his stepmom, who was a lovely person, Dana. Dana gave me a book right after the Bond film, because I could have, had I had the... If I hadn't made, anyway, that's another story. But so we hit it off great. And that's why that dinner, I think, I did this movie called Terrorist on Trial, the United States of America versus Salim Ajami, where Richard Maybaum, I had tremendous reviews. It was in all the papers, New York Times, all this LA. And Richard Maybaum called up Cubby Broccoli and says, Cubby, put on Channel 2. That's our next Bond villain. And Cubby says, I've got it on. I think so, too. And then they called me in that next day or so.
Incredible.
That's how it happened. I didn't audition for it or anything. Mm. And then they were creating the character and bingo. And Cubby was just an amazing, wonderful person.
Another key person in the cast we haven't mentioned is Felix, David Hedison.
David was a sweet man. Hedison, sweet guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was just a lovely, lovely person, David Hedison. I liked him. He was very nice, very, you know, and he was friends with them.
What were your memories of that scene when, you know, you're basically about to have him fed to the sharks? Some incredible moments you have in that scene.
Where's my wife?
Don't worry. We gave her a nice honeymoon.
I want you to know this is nothing personal. It's purely business.
Sorry, old buddy, but 2 mil is a hell of a chunk of dough.
Killing me won't stop anything, Sanchez.
There are worse things than dying, hombre.
See you in hell!
No,
Today is the first day of the rest of your life.
Well, that was, you know, the feeding of the shark. That was a, you know, I have my own personal justifications for things that you do. But, you know, your imagination is, this is a guy that infiltrated my world. He tried to take me down. So now you have to suffer the consequence. You know, it was not purely business, nothing personal.
Yes. I count 165 credits you've got on IMDb, Robert. I mean, what a career. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Unbelievable.
It's been such a pleasure to hang out with you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for your time, your heart, your appreciation of Bond and of cinema. And congratulations on what you're doing. Keep doing it.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you so much.
Best villain in the best Bond.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Robert.
God bless,
guys.
Have a
great
day.
Take care.
All of you boys. Bye-bye. God bless you. Really the worst.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.